Hey, it's Bill Simmons. Did you know I've had my podcast for 15 years? Do you know that it is the most downloaded sports podcast of all time? Did you know I have guests from the sports world, from the culture world, people who work for The Ringer, people outside The Ringer, celebrities, experts, you name it. It's on my podcast 3 times a week, late Sunday night, late Tuesday night, late Thursday night, The Bill Simmons Podcast. Check it out on Spotify. This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr. and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Musa Kwanga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am all right, thanks, man. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. We are wearing matching grey sweatshirts.
We really are. Good weekend.
Yeah, really great, thanks. Played some of that paddle tennis, which was great fun. Yeah, great fun. Watched a lot of football. Caught up with a friend who was here from law school, a law school mate who was here from Ireland with a bunch of his friends. Shout out to Fergal and the gang. My goodness, they
Fergal
really are.
Fergal and the gang.
The delegation of Irishmen, the righteous Irish in Berlin. They came through and they had a great time and then caught up with another friend for a birthday. So it was a really lovely, lovely weekend. How about yourself?
Nice, man. All good. Thanks. All good. Pretty quiet. Watch some football. Ate some food.
Good times.
Pretty low key.
Good times.
Pretty low key.
Love to see it.
Some admin quick. We hope everyone stays safe and well. And
yes.
Righty's House on Tuesday will be you and I.
Yes.
Talking to Ian. Going to be a bit of a flower fest. We're going to do some more Arsenal Man United stuff on there, but we're going to look at it through some key performances. Touch on some other stuff as well. Touch on some WSL stuff. We're going to mention it quickly today because there was an issue with a number of games being called off due to frozen pitches. I mean, Chelsea-Liverpool started and then was called off. But actually, go and check Counterpressed. That'll be out later today. It might be out now by the time you listen to this. Flo and the gang will be talking about that on Counterpressed as well. So go and check that. If you haven't subscribed to Counterpressed, go and subscribe to Counterpressed. Flo Lloyd-Hughes and her gang. Twice a week, I think now. But today on Stadio, we are going to focus on the Stadio Derby because it was Stadio Derby weekend.
Wow, yes.
And it was a very, very, very enthralling Stadio Derby in the Premier League. We'll also touch on a couple of other Premier League bits quick. We'll touch on the Bundesliga's return, and then we're going to talk about Serie A and Juve's point stocking, what that might mean for the league, what it might mean for Juve. I think that might do us maybe a couple of other bits if we think about it.
It comes to us, we'll jump into that. Yeah.
Let's get into it after this.
Let's do it.
All right, man, shall we begin in North London?
We have to.
What a game of football.
Wow.
Arsenal 3, Manchester United 2. Musa likes to just make sure everyone knows the score.
Yeah.
Arsenal going a goal down. Manchester United taking the lead early on through Marcus Rashford. And I think that's the earliest that Arsenal have been behind this season.
It is, yeah. Ryan, the way this game started, the way that Arsenal started specifically, the way they were moving the ball was spectacular.
Pretty incredible, huh?
They were amazing. This was like, and I know we don't like to the past too much, but actually I think with Arsenal, I think it's necessary, it's relevant, and it's instructive. This was Wenger ball for 2022. This was the natural evolution of what Arsenal had been building through Arsene Wenger. There's the natural like descendant of that style, like the evolution of that style. Arsenal are relentless. And they are ruthless. And I think 3 or 4 times, I didn't comment much. There was like this WhatsApp chat group. And I was just kind of sitting, watching it and taking it in. And just going, I think 3 or 4 times in the game, I was just like, what a team this is. Multiple playmakers. This is the thing that's changed, I think, from like the early 2000s, the late 90s with Arsenal. You knew who the playmakers were in terms of there were like maybe 2 or 3 initiators of, you know, people that could run a game. Pires, Bergkamp would run the game. Arsenal now have five people that can run the game. Like if you said like, oh, we'll stop Odegaard, Saka will run it. We'll stop Saka, Zinchenko will run it. Stop Zinchenko, Martinelli can run a counter. Like he can run play, like he can initiate. And he's not just a dribbler, right? He's putting passes together, putting movement together. And this was the difference between United, I think, and Arsenal in the end. There was that incredible stat about half an hour in, the amount of touches that Arsenal had in the United box.
Incredible.
United had like one or two and Arsenal had like 15 or 16. And that was the thing. It was the fact that Arsenal stuck to the plan. They kept playing football. Mm. They kept playing.
Well, I mean, do you want to, on that note, Opta posted a thing after the game saying that Arsenal had 63 touches in the Manchester United box. No side has had as many in a single Premier League game in this season so far. Manchester United only had 12 in the Arsenal box. The difference of 51 touches in the opposition box between Arsenal and Manchester United has only been higher in one Premier League game this season, and it was Manchester City 4, Southampton 0 in October. So if you think about that, a side that is bottom of the league currently against Manchester City is the only game where that disparage, where that gap has been bigger than a side who a week ago, remember, if results had gone their way this week, if they'd won both of their games this week, would have been, what, 2 points behind Arsenal?
Yeah.
At the top of the league. And I think that is the main difference here between, like, what makes it such an impressive performance is the fact that, like, this isn't against a side that's bottom of the league. This is against a side who could have gone third.
They were really good at boxing out Rashford, who scored a spectacular goal. Get that sec. Rashford and Antony, they're double teaming. So very often you see Antony break down the line, Rashford in the line. Rashford in the second half at one point, no, the first half, cut down the flank, looks up and has two men on him, and so plays it back down the line, retains possession, but crucially doesn't get to the byline. They were really, really good at closing off angles and key areas. And the thing about Arsenal and United, the game actually maybe felt more balanced on a superficial level than those stats reveal, but it's because Arsenal were like, we'll let you get this far and no further. The amount of times Saliba stepped in and was like, okay, that's quite enough of that. It was almost like they let Arsenal let United, for the most part, they got them where they wanted them. And the one occasion they didn't have them where they wanted them was because of a moment of otherworldly skill from Rashford. And actually, in a weird kind of way, you almost want the opposition to score goals at that, because those are such worldies that they're not, like the XG for like United was like 0.35, 0.36, right? And United, the Arsenal's over 3.2 or something. Mm. You want United to score goals at that, because that's, you're not giving them good looks or easy looks. So the Rashford goal, actually Saka, one of the few mistakes he makes, gets dispossessed by Rashford. Rashford plays it into one of his players, collects it as a 1-2, goes up against Partey and basically crosses him over. It's one of the techniques, a flip flap like the Elastico. It's the type of technique that very, very few footballers, forwards have the skill to pull off. Like, actually, you know that the Leo Messi thing where Leo Messi beats someone at the near post and the ball almost speeds up off the ground with dip and swerve, and it's near post, but it's kind of unstoppable. It was like that.
It's really clever, just in terms of, I feel like that slight extra touch to go central just creates a little bit of a blind spot for Ramsdale, because I think it's Saliba blocks his view slightly.
Yeah.
I saw a few people praising United. Gary Neville praised United after the game as well. And then I saw a lot of Arsenal fans kind of online being like, how can you say that they were that good? Or how can you be praising United for playing well? Look at how much Arsenal dominated them. I think two things can be true, and which is why I think the Arsenal win is more impressive. Tactically, I thought Manchester United did a lot right, and Erik ten Hag deserves a lot of credit here. Considering they were missing probably their most effective player this season in Casemiro, to lose him for such a big game, we knew it was going to be difficult. But I actually think, bar the odd mistake, McTominay and Eriksen were pretty good.
I thought so.
What they were trying to do made loads of sense.
Yeah.
And yet, they were still dominated by the better team, and a team that is just a couple more years
ahead. In my opinion, they're the best team in the country.
Yeah, a couple more years down the line in terms of their process under that manager.
Yeah. Sorry to utter this sacrilege, but I'm not that gutted by this defeat, because I'm like, this is the progress. Because I think back to the defeat against Brentford and the doom and gloom surrounding that, and the interview, the conversation that Gary Neville has with Jamie Redknapp, and the despair in his voice about no one wants to come to United, we're not attracting a quality of signing, all the rest of it. Now look, we can't say this is a romance story because United have spent 170 million on Casemiro and Antony. So like, that's a lot of money. The thing is that it's not about those signings are important, but weirdly enough, Antony and Casemiro had almost no impact on this fixture. They didn't really, actually the players, this is a triumph in the last few months of Ten Hag's methods.
Yeah.
Primarily. Getting the team to play in a certain way, the performances he's getting out of Wan-Bissaka, out of Luke Shaw, Martinez, just such a smart acquisition, a brilliant acquisition actually. Come back from the World Cup and is absolutely feeling it. Was brilliant for United, arguably the best player, and obviously got a very important goal towards
really
the end.
A good header as well.
A great header, like a Marcelo Salas type finish.
Like, where just, like, I think underrated because Gabriel is on the line and actually really does clever. Really well. I think like Ramsdale just needs to punch that.
Yeah, it's a really clever header, but it's clever because he catches it on the kind of on the up.
If he was 6'5", he wouldn't have been able to do that. I'm just saying, listen, a load of people talking about his height, I think us included early on, but you know, that's where, but as someone who, let's just say, I don't think is that much taller than Lisandro Martinez.
Yeah.
Being closer the height, to the floor, discourse. But being closer to the ground there is handy.
The height discourse, he's ended that and respect him for that. But yeah, Ten Hag's coaching, outstanding, but without dwelling too much on United, we have to talk more about...
No, but I'm okay with doing that as an Arsenal fan.
Okay.
Like, Ten Hag will probably be doing a similar thing to what Arteta did after a Liverpool game a few years ago, where he'll be in the dressing room and be like, that's the level we need to get to. And you feel it. Like, Luke Shaw, after the game, I think said something really interesting. We said, yeah, we deserve that for the second half. Because in the first half... Arsenal, I think, had the better of the first half, but it was a lot more balanced than it was in the second half. It was the second half where Arsenal really ramped it up. And we said with Manchester United last week, they can do a lot with a little. And this was a prime example of that in the first half, because a couple of times they broke through and they had a couple of really good opportunities or looked quite dangerous.
Mm.
And they also did that a couple of times in the second half.
Yeah.
The key things for me, I think, were Bukayo Saka completely, basically occupying Luke Shaw to the point where Luke Shaw couldn't really do anything apart from defend Bukayo Saka all game. Ben White was on a yellow card, and that substitution at halftime of Tomiyasu for Ben White, who I love Ben White. I feel bad calling him Ben because his name is Benjamin. Sorry. I love Benjamin White, and I feel like he's been unbelievable for Arsenal. And this is a sign of how good he's been. It's probably one of his not so great performances in the first half for Arsenal. And yet it still was okay. He's on a yellow card. Arteta takes him off, puts Tomiyasu on, who, because Bukayo Saka is completely pinning in Luke Shaw, all Tomiyasu has to do is just make sure Rashford is marked.
Yeah, yeah.
And United did nothing down that left flank really in the second half, apart from once or twice where Rashford got in around the box.
Yeah, yeah. Kept it really quiet. And the scary thing about that with Luke Shaw and Saka is Luke Shaw gets a good look at Saka in training for England and still couldn't work that out. It's just because he's that dangerous and he's that... And I when I was tweeting about this, and I wasn't completely joking, it's like, Saka actually is kind of becoming an Arjen Robben figure for Arsenal in terms of his ability. You can just let him get on with it. He can be a playmaker. He can attack by himself. He's devastating. The confidence, the power he's shooting with. I mean, that goal, there'll be talk about it, and like De Gea could have done better. But it's the way he unsights him as well.
Well, this is the thing. De Gea's on that side. He's on the right side.
But there's looking for weaknesses.
Yeah.
It's looking for the weaknesses. It's looking up and going, oh, actually, I can go around you here. And we saw Saka do this in the World Cup. He made Tchouaméni look mortal. Mm. Do you understand how hard that was? The form Tchouaméni was moving with for Real and France. Mm. And the man caused him significant near fatal damage, you know? And... That's the
I feel like we actually, you know, was it Conte? It's like Conte did that? It was like, we want to kill them. And then he kind of paused and realized what he said. It was just like, in a football way.
So yes, in a football way. Saka's goal was outstanding. And there was a moment really, can I just say, Arsenal, sort that contract out.
Yeah, I think they'll be fine. I think it'll be fine. I think with the things like, we'll maybe talk about them a little bit later, but with signing someone like Trossard as opposed to having to spend all of that outlay on someone like Mudryk, I think just gives Arsenal a little bit more flexibility. They've obviously got Jakub Kivior coming in from Spezia, which just happened out of nowhere. 22 years old, very, very, very highly rated. Pretty impressive signing from Arsenal, actually, for, you know, less than £20 million as well. So two very good signings for less than £40 million in total in the January transfer window.
Very good signings. And what they need.
Very, very good, I think. But yeah, like, and then I think Saka, like we said, just caused sure problems all game. And there's a thing in football, and I was talking to Ian about this actually, about how like I wish it was a little bit more accepted in analysis that, for example, like even on the Saka goal, there was a little bit of analysis that I was watching, and they were just like, there needs to be a midfielder come out and get to Saka there, or like there needs to be someone to get out there. And we watch a lot of NBA, right? And one of the most common things that we hear is like, good offense just beats good defense.
Yes.
And sometimes someone is just too good.
Do you know, Messi scores a goal against Angers a couple of weeks ago where he basically, and I sent to, you know, our mutual friend Callum from Caracom, I dropped him a line with a video of this goal, and Messi basically walks across the face of the defense in the final third. They can't get near him. He plays a 1-2, give and go, puts it in the far post. And I said, how do you defend that? You can't, because he walks across the face of goal, 35 yards from goal. And if you come out and get him, he puts it in behind you. So you sit deep thinking, okay, look, we're going to pick our poison with Messi. If we come out and reach him, he'll dribble through us, pass through us, and we're gone. And of course, like, he ends up scoring anyway. There's certain things in football you can't really stop. When Saka is locked in, to your point, when Saka was locked in like that, you're not stopping him. And it's okay, actually. It's okay.
Maybe Christian Eriksen could have stayed, like, kept him on his right-hand side. Maybe if Casemiro had been there, he might have got to him a little bit. But it's just like, that is still a very, very low percentage shot. It's just one of those. You kind of be like, fair. Like, it's like Rashford's goal. A couple of errors in the build-up to it, but actually the finish, you're never going to be like, to William Saliba, you need to stop that. Or no one really pointed any fingers at Aaron Ramsdale, because they're just like, it was just a really good goal.
Ryan, listen, Everyone got their jokes off when Di Maria was cooking Pavard in the 2018 World Cup. Everyone got their jokes off when Di Maria was cooking Koundé in the World Cup final. Everyone got their jokes off. But if any right back on the planet was like, okay, you go and do a better job, no hand is going up. Because nobody wanted it.
No one wants that smoke. And then we mentioned Martinez's goal. I mean, yeah, just very, very good header. Gabriel's great unlucky. Finish. Ramsdale probably could have done a little bit better on that one, punched it away.
One of those goals that's never not quite anyone's fault, because the way the ball drops and he reacts to it, you look at it and go, I looked and thought, you know, actually, I'm struggling to blame this on anyone. Like, when I see a goal like that, maybe a Ramsdale could have done better, but in terms of,
ball drops, it's no one's real, it's kind of one of those, but I think prior to that, I think Ramsdale punching might have been the best.
Yes, I think that's fair.
Eddie Nketiah getting Arsenal back into it in the...
First half, the equaliser.
We just skipped Nketiah's equaliser, but... great bit of movement. Wan-Bissaka kind of caught sleeping. Been really impressed with Eddie Nketiah. We'll talk more about Eddie on Righty's House, because I feel like we want to talk about the strikers with the striker.
Can I say two classic centre forward finishes?
Yeah.
The definition of crashing the box.
I mean, the second one is just like, I mean, maybe let's just talk about the winner, because we've talked about
the karate kick.
If you were going to close your eyes and be like, okay, imagine that a side has completely dominated the last half an hour of a football match and it's 2-2. And they've been working the ball wide, working it, switching it, crossing in, creating space, creating the odd overload. They're actually doing really well. They're just not really putting the ball away. Imagine what the winner in stoppage time looks like. It's kind of this.
It's exactly this.
And actually, I think who deserves a lot of credit for this is Leandro Trossard, who was involved from the moment he came on the pitch and kind of just looked like he'd been there a long time.
It's such a great signing. 10 out of 10, no notes.
At that stage of the game, to be able to bring on someone like Trossard, I don't know, it almost looked too smooth, that transition.
He's such an Arsenal player, though.
He really is. And I love Martinelli. I think Martinelli's... a few questions have been asked about Martinelli at the moment, but I think Martinelli has to adapt his game when you have an underlapper, roaming, free roll, libero left back, as opposed to someone like Tierney, who's always going to overlap. And I think
some of his numbers as
well.
Some of his numbers as well. Like, his stats, like, you know, Martinelli is legit. And I think it's easy to ask questions because of the rapid news cycle of sport. And it's easy because Arsenal have so quickly, here's the thing, Martinelli and Saka have so quickly raised expectations of themselves. They're now being set these new levels. And also there's the thought, people can't forget that Mudryk was almost signed and he would have been down the left as well. And that's going to be a thing that plays on the minds of Arsenal fans. I think it's underestimated how disruptive Martinelli is. And I say that as a rival, as a fan of a rival team. It's a very unpleasant proposition to see that man coming at you. And the thing with Martinelli is, his impact goes beyond the stats. I'll always say that. Like, he is a uniquely disruptive influence on that flank because he occupies so many people.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of the few players that you can go... Like, he's almost... Martinelli is what I wished Anthony Martial had become. Actually,
that's interesting.
Do you know what I mean? Like, in terms of what Martinelli is evolving into, I wish Martial had been that. Someone that cuts in off the right, off the left, sorry, prefers their right foot, can go either way, though, on the dribble, can isolate you, can be a playmaker, can be a decisive finisher, and is unafraid of anything, and who crucially starts a match with real intensity. Like Arsenal, like Martinelli's ability. Martinelli's the kind of player that, sorry, Arsenal fans, to make you dream, but Martinelli's the kind of player, if you said like
you
5 years.
If you say
3 years from now, who could you imagine scoring for Arsenal in the first 3 minutes of a big Champions League tie? It's Martinelli.
Okay, that's not as bad as I thought you were going to say. Okay, do you know what I thought you were going to say? In 5 years' time, if you could imagine Martinelli scoring in the Champions League final from Real Madrid, would anyone disbelieve you? And I'd be like, no, that's fair, but why'd you have to say it out loud? That's what I thought you were going to go. I thought you were going to go there.
I didn't know I was going to go before I scaled back. I was going to say a Champions League final for Arsenal.
Oh, fucking hell. That's even worse.
I know. That's why I scaled back. Because now I've painted the picture.
Oh, Musa.
But do you know what I mean?
Actually, like, said this during the game. Like I said during the game, like the worst thing about this is the fact that, like, it was part of me. This is so funny how football fandom works. I was just like, I kind of miss when Arsenal were just like eighth, because I'd enjoy watching them. And if Arsenal won, that'd be great. But it's just like, well, we probably won't. And now it's like, oh no, these are really important. And like, oh no. Anyway, sorry, Martinelli.
Totally understand. Martinelli, I think, you know, really impressive player. And I've talked about Mudryk before and Arsenal, who looked very good actually for Chelsea and the time he spent on the pitch. Arsenal will find other players. And it's sad because I think he would have been a spectacular addition to Arsenal's ranks. But if you look at the Brighton production line, if you look at Evan Ferguson emerging now and, you know, replacing Trossard, look, there's no shortage of outstanding young footballers in the world that would fit beautifully into an Arsenal system. Brighton show you can always find great replacements.
Shout out Matoma's goal, by the way, as well in that game.
Oh my God,
unbelievable. Because we've already talked about that game. But yeah.
Can I just say, moment in the crowd, I saw a player, a fan, seeing he cuts off the flank and just cracks at top corner, lets the fans all sign behind the goal, and there's one of them just like clapping. I was like, you know what? Respect to that fan right there,
it's
because
like, you
know
the little kid in
real.
The NBA game taking the respect hour.
Yes,
that
exactly.
Meme.
It's like, you got us, you cooked us there. But
so good.
But back to Nketiah, great finish there, and the finish for the goal. You know what I love about it as well, from an Arsenal perspective, it's the process, isn't it? It wasn't a 30-yard screamer. Arteta can go, and you can't really do much with a 30-yard screamer. You can't say, oh, wow, look, we played our football and we won. Because a 30-yard screamer is anyone's guess. But Arteta can go into the dressing room and be like, you see what happens when we stick to it? Do you see what openings we can provide? Do you see what openings we can make when we just do it? And actually, weirdly enough, it was a kind of, and they say this as a compliment, reminiscent of Man City, actually, in the way that City will get good looks late in the game and they'll get tap-ins late in the game because they'll just prize you apart and they'll keep just like working away at the hinges and the door eventually fell off for them. And so when they scored, it didn't feel unfair when they scored.
No, I mean, if I was going to say, if you look at the XG plot graph, the way that it just gradually increases through the
25 just, shots.
I mean, this is it. As we say, we'll talk more about it with Ian on Wright's House, because I want to talk about Zinchenko, because I just think he's a complete unicorn. Like, I think this is probably his best game in an Arsenal shirt so far. But also a lot about the intangible stuff, because Ian said he did an interview with him for Premier League Productions after the game. And I want to kind of leave that for Wright's House, because it was really interesting what Ian said. The thing that I've been really probably more impressed with is that the North London derby came the day after the Manchester derby, where Man United were applying pressure on Arsenal at the top. And that was the point where people said, if Man United would beat Palace and then beat Arsenal, well, they can be a few points behind Arsenal. And that was where United were in a title race. Arsenal the next day go in away from home at Spurs, a place they've not won at in 9 years, and they dominate Spurs and they win the game. A week later, hours after Manchester City closed the gap to 2 points on Arsenal. So then do this to a Manchester United side that have been on that run.
Yeah.
Is so impressive. But with all of that pressure they've had on them, for a young side, remember, what, youngest or second youngest starting 11 in the league this season on average, a side who hasn't done this before. I think that for me is the most impressive thing, because it's hard to quantify that level of pressure. And having to
in its own way, it's even more impressive than what Napoli did against Juventus in its own way. But in terms of very roughly teams that don't have experience of really closing it out, I know that Zinchenko and Jesus do, but like the fact that Arsenal, they've answered every question asked of them. And I don't know, you dropped me a line actually a few weeks about this, and you were talking about Arsenal. And obviously, as an Arsenal fan, you're more anxious about this than I am because I see it from outside. Yeah. But I'm like, look, that 4-2 win against Brighton, at Brighton.
Yeah, we said this. Yeah.
Oh my God. Like that. And the challenges in this team, this Arsenal team just keeps answering the hardest questions. Shout out to Edu for the recruitments.
Yeah.
Because we've got to say, that man has brought in straight hits. You know, there's a thing I always joke about Berlin as a city. I was like, it doesn't always give me what I want, but it gives me what I need.
Yeah.
And I think that actually Arsenal's recruitment, you don't always get what you want in the last couple of years, but you definitely get what you need. You look at all the people brought in. That was Ramsdale, Tomiyasu, you know, Benjamin White. Just and Trossard too, just looking, man, just fitted right in. It was so, when I saw Trossard's name linked to Arsenal, I just thought, my reaction in the group, I was just like, I love that signing. I love that. So yeah, really excited for Arsenal and what they're doing this year and for what they should carry on to do. Yeah. Last thing United before we actually move on from this, but what I really like about the United team is you can very clearly see the players who are like kind of placeholders. Mm-hmm. And I include Wout Weghorst in that. And that's not to disrespect. Yeah. It's more in terms of a long-term solution. So he's not a long-term solution to the striker challenge, but you have now, Ten Hag has the framework. And so when you're now looking at United as a player that might want to join, you're looking very clearly at places where they have long-term need. Mm. At number nine, in their central midfield areas, and you're thinking, oh, like I'm 22, I can go there and basically like stake a claim for the next like 5, 6, 7 years, because you're now seeing a path to it. And that's the beauty of what Ten Hag has done. The infrastructure is clear. The plan is clear. Actually, rather like Arteta, maybe 2 years ago, where you had a sense of the framework, and Arteta was like, if you let me plug in the right players to the system, we're going to look like this.
Yeah.
And we're just, you know, and we're 2 years behind Arsenal. And that's not a kind of, I don't mean that in a kind of negative way. I mean, you know, our peak performance level.
Your manager's only just joined.
But then we're 2 years behind. And that's why I don't feel too bad, because if you'd said to me, if you said to me when we lost to Brentford and got absolutely cleaned out, by the way, you'll be this good in a few months, I'd have been like, oh my God, amazing.
Dude, honestly, even though they beat Arsenal at Old Trafford, we said before that actually Arsenal played really, really well. Mm. And I saw a more...
This was a better performance, actually.
I think in terms of...
In some ways.
I think in terms of what it tells you for the future, Manchester United looked a lot more tactically sound in this
cohesive
game, I think.
Yes.
And some people might disagree with that, and that's cool, but I feel like that's what I felt anyway watching the game. And that was at like half time. Elsewhere in the Premier League then, quickly, quick shout for Manchester United. Quick shout for Manchester City and Erling Haaland, a hat trick.
Yes.
Against Wolves. Beat Wolves 3-0. So he's already scored more goals than the past 4 Golden Boot winners, I think, in the Premier League.
Goodness.
What's he got? So he's on 25 goals for 20 games.
Has he played almost 20? Has he played like 90? Has he even played in all 20?
I know, sure, right? That's the thing. No, he probably hasn't. So how many games has he played this season? He's played...
19.
19 games?
19.
Okay, so let's do our maths. So he's on course for 48 goals. Well, it's a little bit lower. Earlier on in the season, he was on course for like 60 goals.
He was.
Do you remember when Pogba had those 4 assists or something last season? He was 148 assists.
And he got like 2 more and he just dropped right off.
Man City just looked good. Wolves not great.
Grealish looked really good. Grealish is feeling, I think there's an element of like, I think he's trying to like step up his outputs, isn't he? Mm. Assists and goals. He's really after that, because I think that it can't, but you know, that transfer fee can't but weigh on you.
I know.
It has to. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Leeds 0, Brentford 0 in the early game as well on Sunday. There were a few nil. Well, Palace also drawing 0-0 with Newcastle on Saturday night. See, that's not a bad week for Palace, to be honest. A point against Man United at home and a point against Newcastle at home.
You'll take that. Not at all. Great results. Yeah.
Very tidy indeed. West Ham beating Everton in the absolute crunch game on Saturday.
Man, Jared Bowen needed that performance. He needed that.
Two for Jared Bowen, two for West Ham. He hasn't officially been fired yet, but there is a lot of rumours that Frank Lampard will be sacked by Everton today, which,
damn.
I mean, hard to kind of say is unfair, but we've also said before with a lot of the stuff that's going on at that football club, it's bigger than the manager. And I'm not sure changing a manager is going to do a huge amount in the long term, although maybe they just need someone to come in and keep them up, you know.
Yeah.
They go down, that's going to be critical. But massive win for West Ham. Pulls them out of the relegation zone. They're on 18 points now. Wolves on 17. Bournemouth drop into the bottom three on 17. Everton on 15.
Tied to the bottom.
It's kind of gnarly down there.
Very much so. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bournemouth drew with Forest on Saturday. Late equaliser for Forest. We mentioned the Leicester-Brighton game. It was a fun game, this.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Southampton losing 1-0 at home to Villa. Ollie Watkins with about 15 minutes to go.
Emery quietly doing work there. Doing some serious work. You know. Listen, Villa moving up the table nicely and unafraid to make some big calls. Like, you know, Matty Cash dropped in place of Ashley Young. Moves like that.
They've closed the gap. They're only a point behind Chelsea and Liverpool in the league now.
Listen. That game was an interesting sign of the times.
Ooh, yeah, this was very much a winter midday kickoff.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
This was not a good game of football. He had the Kai Havertz. I think Chelsea would be unlucky here. This felt a little bit spiritually onside.
Oh, I'm slightly nervous about Kai Havertz's development.
Yeah?
Slightly because, yeah, do you know what it is? Not because I don't think he's a wonderful player, but I was thinking for the first time in a while, I was like, I really hope he evolves into the player that his talent promises he should. And it's because there's so many moving parts around him in the attack, mm-hmm. right? There's so many moving parts, like the wide forwards being brought in and Mudrik's come in and Pulisic might be going out and certainly Ziyech, like he's going out. And Kai Havertz maybe finding his place and all that. Like, is he going to get that kind of aggression you need in the box? You know, he scored a late winner the other week, but is he going to be that volume goal scorer, that volume nine? I don't know, but it's almost like, I don't know if I'm nervous or worried.
He's not
but
even really a nine though, is he?
What will he evolve into? And I think the thing is, a well-functioning Chelsea forward line will see the best Havertz. Like
I still believe that his future is like a kind of a roaming advanced eight. That's where he's at his best. Like, I don't think he's at his best leading the line.
I think that's fair. That's fair. I think the build-up is essential.
The best football that he played at Bayer Leverkusen was as this kind of... I mean, he played all over the place at Bayer Leverkusen. That's the thing, but...
Because he was so good. Yeah, yeah.
Especially when Julian Brandt was there as well. And they had such a good chemistry. But just finding space between the lines, between players and kind of like linking play, being the glue, but like in an advanced way.
In the German Cup for the Pokal final, they put him as a nine. Do you remember that? And it was just like, what is he doing all the way up there? He wasn't doing any of the build up. But yeah, it's a small point. Sorry to like dwell on that. But Liverpool, Chelsea, caveats with Chelsea, huge amount of injuries. Okay, so that has to be said up front. Huge amount of injuries. And they also just look, I don't know, knackered, but just, this was hard work, this game. This game was hard work. Yeah, yeah.
They need next season. This happened the year after they won the league for different reasons, but I feel like we talked about this on Righty's House actually, like never underestimate how hard it can be to chase that Man City side over a sustained amount of time. And yes, there are questions, legitimate questions, I think, about what is the plan, but also I just feel that there's a bit of a end of a cycle with that squad and they haven't really got the pieces yet to fully fulfill the gaps.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, man, we'll see. Anything else in the Premier League you want to touch on? Or should we wrap Premier League?
I think that's it. And that's it for now. Yeah, yeah.
All right, a couple of bits of news before we move on. So a pretty grim story coming out in Spain. So Pumas in Mexico have terminated Dani Alves's contract after he was arrested on suspicion of sexual assault. He's currently jailed without bail amid ongoing allegations.
Damn.
I'll read a statement from Pumas president Leopoldo Silva. With the information that occurred today about the legal process that the player Dani Alves is facing and for which he is detained in Spain, we've determined to communicate the following. The club has made the decision to terminate the player, terminate the employment contract with Dani Alves from this day on. With this decision, the club reiterates its commitment not to tolerate acts of any member of our institution, whoever they may be, that go against the university's spirit and its values. It's an institution that promotes respect, upright behaviour, dignity and professionalism on and off the field for our players as they are role model in society in Mexico and anywhere in the world. That was from head coach Rafael Puente del Rio. Wow. Grim story. We'll wait for more info on that and see what happens. But Dani Alves arrested on suspicion of sexual assault in Barcelona. Football-wise in Spain, can we just very, very quickly shout out Real Madrid's win over Athletic Club? Benzema's volley was spectacular. in this game.
Great finish from Toni Kroos late on.
Seals the game. Lovely side foot finish. But the highlight of this game, fan posting a video from behind the Real Madrid dugout. Just shout. Did you see this?
No, I didn't. No.
Just shouted at Carlo Ancelotti if he could have a chewing gum. Carlo just turns around and gives him a chewing gum.
Oh my God, that's so funny. That is so... This game was important for a couple of reasons. I mean, lots of conversations about Toni Kroos' future beyond the end of this season. He stepped up and scored. But lots talk about Camavinga potentially going on loan, which Ancelotti came out and quashed. Talk about his inconsistency for Real, and he responded with one of his best performances for Real Madrid. Brilliant. And just such an important part of their midfield at the moment and will be for years to come. The natural heir to, well, he played as DM. Like, he can play as a DM, he can play as an eight. I mean, he can do it all. So, you know, not really worried about his future, I think, at Madrid.
Barcelona beating Getafe 1-0, but they weren't amazing. But a quick shout for Real Sociedad, because they beat Rayo Vallecano 2-0 away, the ninth win in a row, and that's a club record.
They need some serious work, eh?
Dude, man. Like,
him and all making it happen.
Him and all bootleg tees.
Slash out for coach of the year.
I mean, he's just a really good coach, man. Like, over the last few years, if you see how they've developed, and we'll talk about Real Sociedad another time in depth, because there's been so much stuff happening this weekend. Bundesliga's back, so we can't spend too much time on La Liga. But like, they're third in the league.
Yeah.
Like, comfortably third. They're 7 points ahead of Atleti. They're going to get in the Champions League. You know, they won that Copa del Rey, the first trophy in God knows how long. We talked about that when they won it. And he's just slowly made that team feel like they deserve, they should be in third.
Yeah, absolutely.
They are the third best team in La Liga.
Without question.
They got Barcelona and Real Madrid next.
Small fry.
But you know what? They pick up a point or two in those games. Could have a massive sway on the league.
Yeah, they could do.
All right. Bundesliga's back.
Yes.
Wins for Union.
Yeah, big comeback for them against Hoffenheim. Big comeback.
Massive. And that was after Bayern drawing with RB Leipzig on Friday night. Oh, I made the mistake, right, of saying, hey, you know, actually that point means that technically the league is in Freiburg's hands. And so it was all my fault, because Freiburg got absolutely hammered, as you could say, vimmered, by Wolfsburg.
Yeah, they did.
6-0. A really odd result, this, for Freiburg, because before that day, they'd only conceded 17 goals in 15 games, and they conceded 6 in one game. Really, really surprising.
They have to just write this off.
Yeah, I mean, they've got Eintracht at home next, which is a big game, because Eintracht are second.
They look really good against Schalke.
But they're level on points. Christian Streich will be looking at that game as one that they should win at home.
Yeah.
But they need to fix up quick, because the Bundesliga was back and it wasn't messing around. It was kind of like, has it actually been away?
It came out with big main character energy.
Köln beating Werder Bremen 7-1 on the Topspiel der Woche Saturday night game. And then Dortmund just about beating Augsburg 4-3 in one of the most Dortmund games I've seen. Absolutely incredible going forward. Very ropey at the back.
To be honest, one of the most Dortmund-Augsburg games you've seen in terms of...
Very true.
I was actually, a friend of mine was chatting to him the other night. He was on his way. We were out at a friend's birthday. He said, I've got to leave early because I've got to get the early train to Dortmund to watch it. And I said, who are they playing? He was like, Augsburg. And I said, you know what it is with Augsburg. They'll give you a really tough game and you'll prevail and they'll put you through the ringer. And it's exactly what happened. Like, they did it, was at Haaland's first game.
Yeah.
Same thing again. Augsburg love giving Dortmund an absolute chasing.
But the thing was, like, all the Dortmund goals were so good. Like, Bellingham's goal was so good.
Yeah,
Jamie Vardy-Gittings came off the bench 5 minutes later, scored an unbelievable goal.
Yeah.
And then Gio Reyna came off the bench, scored an unbelievable
goal. Oh my God,
winner.
Yeah. Especially after everything he's had.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dortmund coming out and winning 4-3 in the end. And Bellingham was just that opening half hour specifically, but for the whole game, he was just, he's so commanding. For someone his age, man, I still can't get over that. He's just...
We've said this before, but players come back from the World Cup in incredible form who've just remained absolutely locked in.
Yeah.
Like, there's no World Cup hangover from these people. Like, yeah. Lisandro Martinez is coming out like of that tunnel going, who wants it? Like, you know, yeah. Yeah. Everyone's come back on smoke from the World Cup. So shout out to all those players. Yeah.
Also in this game, massive shout to Sebastian Haller, who made his competitive debut for Dortmund. He came on as a substitute. So good to see him back. And he's going to be massive for Dortmund in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
Quick shout for the derby between Gladbach and Leverkusen as well. Leverkusen looked unbelievable.
They flew out of the tracks, yeah.
Going 3-0 up against Gladbach, who nearly pulled them back thanks to two late Lars Stindl goals. The second one in particular
was a banger, playing. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Xabi Alonso doing work.
Some of the football that Leverkusen were playing in this game was unbelievable. And that's a massive result for them to come back and win at Gladbach. But yeah, I love Lars Stindl. I actually said to someone the other day, only semi-jokingly, that like...
Yeah.
If Arsenal needed some numbers...
Not a bad shout. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know who would actually, I think, spontaneously combust if that transfer happened?
Yeah, Jenny Wu.
Jenny Wu, friend of the pod. Like, what happened to Wu? It's like, she spontaneously combusted. She can't.
Couldn't deal.
But let's finish with Serie A.
Yes. We'll go straight in with Juventus because this is the story. Like, because the results in Serie A weren't that surprising this weekend. No big shocks. Napoli beats Lautaro 2-0. Osimhen scores again. Great 3-0 draw between Juventus and Atlanta. But the headline...
This game was the pivotal.
It was the pivotal game. The headline here is that Juventus have been docked 15 points pending an appeal for allegedly inflating prices of players they'd sold. Now, there's a great piece, Yahoo Sports, on this. Shout out to Henry Bushnell.
Can I shout out a couple of things that James Horncastle's wrote for The Athletic as well? Good explainers and a lot of good...
Absolutely, great explainers. So fundamentally what happened here was Juventus basically wanted more room to buy players. Because of the FFP rules, you can only spend a certain amount over a certain number of windows. So what they did was, if you sell players for a certain amount of money, then you've got an increased cap you can spend up to. So what they were doing was, allegedly, selling players for, let's say, 20 million and saying, actually, their value was 50, which gives you 30 million extra to spend in a particular window. That's an example, right? So they got docked 15 points for this. And in terms of what this means, and then there's also bans issued of varying lengths to professionals in and around the organization. So Agnelli banned for 2 years.
Yeah.
Perotic banned for 30 months.
Well, this is interesting. So basically the ruling applies to Italian football, but the country's federation is asking it to be extended to UEFA and FIFA. And Spurs, as of recording, we haven't heard anything from Spurs.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, we touched on it a while ago when the entire Juve board resigned and we were like, we know it's going to be bad.
Yeah, this is bad. This is bad. Because
this is kind of one of those kind of like, hey, we resigned. Don't worry about it. Can you go easy on the club? We resigned kind of thing.
Mm.
But I mean, I had a tweet from someone just quickly before you move on. Sorry to cut in, but
no, go for it.
Someone tweeted me saying, listen, there's someone who's new to football, but are really into American sports. Can you explain in a kind of context what that means? And I was like, it's kind of like, imagine that if the second seed in the East at the halfway point of the season in the NBA, all of a sudden got docked like 15 to 20 wins.
Yeah.
That's kind of basically what it's like, right?
It is, but it's even worse because it is, yes, that's a really good analogy in terms of what's happened. And there's something else going on with Juventus historically. This is the second big scandal to hit them in a few years. And in terms of their decline in the context of European football, like this alleged conduct, is coming as a result of panic at losing ground, both domestically and internationally.
Mm.
You know, we need to spend money to stop the rot, but the rot is deep actually at Juventus. And you know, the 5-1 defeat by Napoli was bad on the field, but off the field, this is a defeat that has bleak implications because you look at some of the players in that Juventus squad that could get flipped. You know, I said to you in the group, only like half joking, I was like, actually, Arsenal could go back in for Vlahovic and probably should. Like, if this ban
be available way less than he would have been.
James Horncastle said it on Twitter a few days ago when someone said, "Oh, is so and so gettable from Serie A?" And James Horncastle said, "Like, everyone in Serie A is gettable."
Well, this is the thing that's a real, but like, obviously, people love to kind of shit on Juve, like non-Juve fans, let's say, because they, especially with the run that they had in the 2010s of being the dominant force in Serie A. But remember, they were for all of the bad stuff around Juve, they were really Serie A's only real contender to win the Champions League, for example.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't think it's quite as binary as are they good or are they bad. The dominance that they had over Serie A wasn't good for the league as a whole in the long run, but I think maintaining those Champions League runs, I think, was quite good to keep Serie A in the conversation because people wanted to watch Juve and therefore people would tune into Serie A. The problem that I think you have is that, and James Horncastle wrote a really good piece about this on a much wider thing, but just as we're probably saying Serie A is a, feels like it's hitting a sweet spot of being competitive, having really good players and being really good quality, something like this is dangerous because it then throws into doubt a lot of stuff about the league, much like the Calciopoli did, scandal
did. Yes.
There are loads of things going on in Serie A at the moment that are completely pivotal for the future of that league. And if they can't get executed properly, Serie A is in big trouble again. Main thing is the ability for clubs to build new stadium.
Yeah.
Far too many clubs are in the position where they want to do that and they can't because of various legislation and getting stuff through.
And you don't want a league where, like, and I hate to say it, and I say this because, you know, we're both fans of Premier League clubs, where people are looking at, like, a club like Napoli and just thinking, oh, we're going to pick off players like... We're picking off a carcass. We're going to dismantle it. It's not good for the league at all.
Obviously, the Money League came out last week. And again, Premier League clubs dominate it. And the gap between... You look at the spending in January... Ironically, praised Arsenal earlier on in the season for saying, hey, they've only spent like £40 million on two great players. But you look at what other leagues have spent in total, and it is completely gross.
You look at the miraculous job that Atalanta have done in that context, you know. And the thing is, these players, these teams, and I know Napoli's squad is stacked, but Napoli and Atalanta in particular are performing at a level that is basically maximizing their resources, right?
Yeah.
They're going above, which, you know, of course clubs should do that, but even maximizing your resources is not good enough. No. That's the thing that really concerns you about all of this. People are just looking at these clubs going, we'll pick them off, because you can't develop continuity. And also as a fan, you can't have the stories. You can't have the stories of a team that has 3-4 years together that goes on a deep run in the Champions League. Like the days of, like, not to throw it because any one example is just unfair, but like, the days of those clubs where you had like the same core for 3, 4, 5 years, let's say a Sevilla, for example, 3, 4, 5 years, the same kind of lineup, they kept coming back and running it back. You don't have those anymore. You don't really have those anymore. So it's a shame. It's sad, but there we are. There we are.
I think that's the real worry about this, but.
Yeah. So bleak times.
It is, man, because I think the league, from a football point of view, we've loved watching Serie A over the last few years. It's been so fun to watch. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens at Juve, because they're now in ninth place on 23 points now because of their draw with Atalanta, which was an unbelievable game, by the way, 3-3. But shouts to Adam Ola-Luckman, by the way. Another brace in this game in a very, very good season for him. But yeah, man, I hope this doesn't derail Serie A too much, because even though there was a long way to go and the financial gap, especially in like TV rights around the world, is so big compared to the Premier League. But this is something for another day, actually. We wanted to talk, weirdly, before the weekend happened, we were talking about this stuff about the Premier League streaming.
Yeah.
If it's a little bit of a quiet week, maybe we'll touch on that on Thursday, and maybe we can talk a little bit more about this stuff as well, because I feel like it's part of the same thing.
Yes. Look, this is a conversation that's not going anywhere anytime fast.
No. Anything else you want to touch on the Juve thing, or?
There's not, just my general sadness that all of it was avoidable. And I think, just look in the mirror. I think clubs like this, at a time like this, should just really look in the mirror and think, like, what are we doing? What is the identity here? What's the plan? What's the purpose? And get back to basics, really. You know, not cutting corners, really, because this is about cutting corners, isn't it? And I think maybe that desire to cut corners is because it's knowing deep down there aren't easy answers to this. There's not easy ways out of this. And I have a lot of sympathy, actually, for clubs. I have a lot of sympathy for clubs who find themselves outpriced, unable to compete with the financial behemoth of the Premier League. But it's not impossible to make your impact. Like Juventus, actually, to be honest, the biggest club in Italy, if any club can draw on all the talent, like if there's, the reason I have a limited amount of sympathy for Juventus is that there are young people all over Italy dying to play for them, right? That's a huge amount of goodwill they enjoy institutionally. even despite their scandals, right? Even through their scandals. So they're not short of natural talent that they can recruit and bring on board. And I hope this leads to a bit of a revamp for them and a rethink, because it's overdue, actually. But yeah, that's all really. Yeah.
Should we leave it there today?
Yeah, we've covered every blade of grass, football speaking.
You're saying we're like two Zinchenkos.
Oh my goodness, imagine.
All right, let's get out of here. We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. Don't forget to check Counterpressed with Flo and the gang. Don't forget to check Righty's House on Tuesday. Moose and I will be joining Ian. Don't forget to check theringer.com and check the Study Art Just playlist on Spotify. And we're playing out on. It's noisy. It's a noisy one. Turn it up. It's very, very noisy because it was a noisy weekend. Words Come Back by The Hated. Anything you want to add, Moose Okwonga?
Nothing further. All good.
All right, everyone. Much love. We'll be back on Thursday. See you then.
See you then.